I prototyped a content pipeline.
What's a content pipeline?
I know, right? So I'll get to that. Martin and I went out to meet up for coffee with a guy called Simon Maple, who works at a company called Tessel. He's a DevRel. And I think they're in pre-alpha or whatever it is. They haven't got a product yet. Or if they have, it's all internal. And sometimes we chat over coffee about what the product is. And I've seen them at events, and they're people who are showing off their stuff have told me what their product is. So this isn't a secret. Like, Tesla have a thing that they haven't released yet, and they're talking about it, and they've got beta testers and stuff. And he was explaining it to us, and I was like, oh. And then nerd sniped myself into making something like it without the millions of VC funding, and obviously nowhere near as good and nowhere near as finished or polished. But yeah, I made a thing, and I was quite pleased with it.
So what have you made with a bit of blue tech and half a suck of a gobstopper?
Yes. It is a little bit spit and sawdust, or Python, as we call it in the trade. So what Tessel does, apparently, now bear in mind the product's not out yet, as I understand it, is they're VC funded and they've got an AI thing. Okay, so like a lot of companies. So yeah, there's that. But the AI thing is quite interesting to me, because rather than someone doing the whole vibe coding, which is like complete nonsense, it's the complete other end of the scale, which is you create detailed specifications of the things you want to create. So rather than just say, hey, make a Python thing that does this in one line and send that to an AI and get it to create rubbish code for you, the idea with their product, I believe, is that it helps you to make rich, detailed specifications for the thing you want to create. And out of that, you feed that into another model, and that makes it step by step, iteratively, to get you to a place where you've got well-tested, secure, you know, usable code rather than something shonky that you threw together with a bit of vibe coding, right?
That's interesting, because a lot of the sort of early conversations I had about like AI code generation, I'd have people say to me, oh, it would be great if you could throw your code base at it and say, write me unit tests for this. And then what it would do would be give you a load of tests that describe what your code already does and doesn't actually make sure it does what you want it to. Whereas I would always say, no, what I want to do is give it the unit tests and say, write the code that makes these pass.
Right. I suspect both are possible. In fact, I know both are possible. But that's kind of assuming you've already got something started. You've already started a project and you've got something going, right? This is starting from the having an idea and moving through the process of articulating how that idea manifests itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've used AI to write unit tests. When I talked about the internationalization tool, that had partial tests. And by feeding it the code in small chunks, very focused, and the coverage reports, it was able to fill the gaps in the coverage of the unit tests. So this sort of focused approach is better than sort of a make me the moon on a stick all at once kind of.
Yes. Please make Facebook. Thank you very much. And I'm aware of that. And I'm well aware that, you know, you have to break any project down into smaller component parts and be very specific about what you want. Another thing that I didn't consider, and something that a lot of people probably don't consider, is you don't need to just use one model and one AI and one prompt to get the result you want. A lot of people ask ChatGPT something because it's the one they know and they maybe signed up for it and they don't even know there are others. It's the one that's got brand recognition, right? When, as you're probably well aware, there are loads of them all over the place. There's Anthropic and Google have got one, Microsoft have got one, and there's loads of little companies that have built their own models that specialize in certain things. And most of them have APIs that you can pay some amount of money to get access to. So I thought, what if you can go from, rather than just asking one question of one LLM with one prompt, what if you had a stack of them in a row and each one of them was a specialist in a different part of the creative process? So one of them at the very start could be optimized for turning ideas into slightly more fleshed out synopsis, for example. The next one in the line could be the one that drafts some content, whatever that content might be. It could be a webinar synopsis, it could be a blog post, it could be a talk submission. And those two steps don't have to be done by the same LLM, not even the same model or the same company, right? You could ask one company to do one part of it because their model works very well with it. Or you could have a locally trained model on your own property and have one that is, like you say, Mark, optimized by feeding it your code or feeding it your house style or feeding it all the posts you've ever written before so it knows not to write those again. Do you see what I mean? Or gets inspiration from them. So the idea is really that you don't just throw everything at one API or at one model. And so I thought, well, how can you do this? And so I busted out some Python. And I broke it down into a few steps. And these steps are completely arbitrary that I just made up and based on a conversation in over coffee with Simon. And I came up with like a thing that helps you develop ideas, a thing that helps you draft a document, a thing that helps you review the document and do QA on it and make sure it's accurate. Another one that does maybe a technical review, because maybe you've got code snippets in an article, or maybe you've referenced something technical that is modern that some LLMs don't know about. And then maybe you want a stage, if this is going to be a public document, like a blog post or something, maybe you want to do some SEO optimization and insert certain words or phrases to try and catch the attention of a search engine. That was like a flow, but that's just a flow for like a blog post. It could be the flow for creating code, or it could be the flow for creating social posts or creating anything really. Breaking it down so it's not just one person does this thing and you throw the entire prompt at one model, right? You break it up into different steps. And some people already do this. And the way they do it is they copy and paste the results of one into another. They validate something. So you ask ChatGPT something and then be a little bit skeptical of what it says and then copy and paste the answer into Google Gemini, which has the ability to go online. And then it says, yeah, no, that doesn't exist. Or yeah, that does exist, but it's not the way it was written. So what my Python does is it's configured with a bunch of text files that say the prompt and the API that it's going to call and the model that it's going to call. And you give it the first step, an idea or a series of ideas, and it tries to flesh out the first ideas using a model that's really good at doing that. And then you get the response back and you pick one of those ideas that's been fleshed out and you think, yeah, I'll go with that one. And then you feed that one to a completely different LLM with a completely different prompt. And I did this all in Python, and step by step, I built it up to a point where it kind of works. And you can point it at different LLMs and give it different prompts. And at the end of it, you get a thing which is started with one line idea, but with prompts all the way through to curate that idea through to whatever the result is that you want, rather than just asking one machine and having a very long conversation with one machine.
So you're using different LLMs from different organizations to handle different steps in the process. And as I understand it, the different models have different financial costs like to use depending on which one you use. So have you found that you can use like an expensive model to start the process and like a simpler model to sort of do some of the refining steps like the review and QA and stuff like that?
That's exactly it. So it's not just, is this model optimized to give the answers I want, but is this one going to cost me a load of money in order to do this, right, this big task? If I'm going to have a big conversation with it, or it's going to be a lot of text that I'm going to throw at it, that's a lot of tokens and it might cost me a lot of money.
Yeah.
So some parts of it actually make sense to have a conversation with a more expensive, better, in inverted commas, model. And some parts of it, like do an SEO optimization, which is basically just looking for words that it can replace with other words. That should be doable by any model, almost without much knowledge, because it's just looking for places where it's appropriate to put certain words and key phrases in order to, you know, try and tickle the search engine algorithm.
And in the thing that you've written, what is the interface like for this pipeline experience? Is it just another chatbot on top of all the other chatbots?
No. I initially thought I'd do it as a web app, and it may end up being a web app, being if you imagine like a text area, and you just type your idea in and you press next and you get a new text area with the result in it of the first conversation, right? And that all conversation all happens in the background. All you see is machine whirring and you get a response back with your ideas fleshed out as a synopsis or your draft being written. And because it's a text area, you can edit it. So you're not just taking the output from one and feeding it to another and the output from that one and feeding it to another. You can tweak it along the way. So it's just a text area. This was the idea I had. And you press next and it goes off to a different LLM. And at every stage, you can either edit it or go back. That was the idea. You could go back and or forward. And if it's getting to a dead end, you could go back to the start and say, no, that idea was rubbish. Let's start all over again.
So what you've really made is a text adventure.
Oh, man, don't make me do that. So that was the idea. The interface would be a web app that you could, like, go through. But, you know, for me, for prototyping, just to see if this was possible and if it works, I just did it as plain text files. So I use a text editor to create the markdown file, and then I run my Python script and feed it the markdown file and say this is, like, stage one. And then it gives me a new markdown file back, which is the result. Plus, it gives me a separate file, which is metadata of what was the prompt, which model did I talk to. So if I wanted to, I could try it with a different model and try the same thing until I get the answer I want. And I'm talking mostly about blog posts because that's what the idea that came into my head. But it could be anything. You know, if you think of any process that has multiple steps where there's a product designer, for example, and then you might have a lead developer who's saying, or CTO who's saying what can and can't be done. And then it goes to the software developer and there's a QA person. You think of each of those roles and you optimize the flow for getting the answer you want, not the random answer that you get if you just ask one question of one LLM. That was the goal, to put educated LLMs in series, which is essentially what I understand Tessel and others are doing as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how this would work from a development point of view, in that you could even have a planning stage, which is picking your technology stack or maybe the design pattern that you want to use, or evaluating different approaches, even prototyping, spiking some stuff before you sort of dig in more aggressively.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it'll work out, but I'm having fun playing with it, and maybe I'll chuck it online and people can laugh at my code.
I've been exploring Python packaging.
Oh dear, I'm sorry. What on earth happened?
Well, I've been working on my Bookshelf Buddy project in Go, and I was starting to hit upon some limitations as I was moving on to the next stage. Oh. I previously mentioned that what I had hoped for, which was a wonderful cross-compilation workflow where I wouldn't actually have to do any building on Raspberry Pis or anything, I could just build a binary and throw it over there and run it. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out for various reasons. And also, I was finding that as I was trying to do things with Raspberry Pi specific hardware, like cameras and like the GPIO and stuff like that, basically Python's where it's at for all that stuff. You know, there's lots of support for doing it in Python, and there's some not terribly well-maintained support for doing it in Go.
Right.
Also, as people were talking to me about microcontrollers for doing this sort of thing, they all run either MicroPython or CircuitPython. There are Go distributions for running on microcontrollers, but again, Python is where all the support is and all of the effort in the community is.
Right.
I was going to say, when you said the cross-building, I was thinking, well, I'm sure we build all of our products that are written in Go, like Sift and Gripe, we build them in a GitHub Action, and it just spits out all of the architectures, and it uses Go Releaser to do that, and it just spits them all out. But then I hadn't factored in the other problem of the hardware is wildly different, and Python is just such a wide ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
All of those hats you can get for the Raspberry Pi, they all come with Python implementations of how to manipulate them.
Exactly. Yes. So I thought, well, maybe I could go back to my original idea when I was prototyping this and work out how to do the things that I wanted Go to do for me, but with Python, one of which was running several functions concurrently, which I did manage to solve with Python's threading module. So the reason I got stuck on this was because I was going up the garden path and looking at something called coroutines.
Oh yeah, coroutines.
Because
yeah.
they sound like go routines. I thought they were the same thing.
No, this is isn't that like a yield pattern?
No, it's to do with well, the module's called async IO, so it's to do with having one process that's running while another is waiting for IO.
Yeah.
So they can be sort of time sharing while they wait for stuff. But that's not what I want. What I want is multiple things going at the same time, so I can have
right.
a process that's watching for me inserting or removing a bookshelf token, a process that's actually playing a book, and a process that's watching for other input to do things like skip forward and back. And it turns out, yes, the Python's threading module is what I wanted, so I can do that. That's fine. The next problem was, how do I avoid the nightmare of distributing Python?
Oh, well, you can't.
Oh, but you can.
By not distributing it.
Yeah, I'll just keep this all to myself. So what I wanted is a nicer distribution story than either install from a Python-specific package manager and blat a load of stuff into your local directory, or have to download the code and then start up a virtual environment and install all the dependencies in there and have to understand what all that means. Basically, I don't want someone to have to be a Python developer to run the program, which is what these things seem to require. So I went looking for other ways of packaging Python, and I came across two options called PEX and SHIV, which both follow a same idea, which is to bundle all of your Python code into essentially an executable zip file, including all of your, basically all the contents of your virtual environment that you're developing in. So you use that for the development part, but then you package it into a file, which you can then distribute.
So are PEX and SHIV like the modern day version? I think it used to be called Python Freeze or Python Freezing back in the day when I used to do this. I think I used a project back then called PyInstaller, and it would turn your Python stuff into basically a .exe on Windows with DLLs from the Python runtime and, you know, whatever other libraries you needed. And you got, like, in air quotes, an executable you could just copy around and it would work.
I did look at PyInstaller as well. I couldn't quite get my head around it, but both PEX and SHIV use a concept called zip apps.
Oh, right.
Which is this particular way of constructing a zip file with a header that Python understands. This is an executable with some Python code in it, basically. So both PEX and SHIV work in a similar way. What I found with PEX is that because I'm depending on libvlc, it requires some support for each module that you want to use within your app. A lot of stuff is supported by PEX and some stuff is supported by other modules, but the Python VLC bindings weren't one that supported. And some people had some suggestions for how to do it, and it involves referencing where the libvlc libraries are on your system, and that didn't seem quite the way I wanted to go. So I had a look at SHIV, which seems to just be a lot simpler in what it does and just kind of worked. It packages all of the Python bits up, so you still have to have libvlc available on your system and you have to have the Python interpreter available on your system, but beyond that, everything that my code needs is within the bundle. I can package that on my laptop. I can put that on a Raspberry Pi, which has Python and libvlc, and run it, and it works.
Ah, I was going to ask, if it's packaged up, is there any binaries in it, or is it all non-architecture specific stuff that goes inside the SHIV thing? Or
exactly. I think it is basically all the Python code, which is interpreted at runtime, so it doesn't need to be specific to any architecture. I've got the same SHIV package will run on my AMD 64 laptop and run on a Raspberry Pi. It's just the Python bit and the libvlc bit, which are the architecture specific bits. I'm happy to say, you know, these are dependencies of my code, because you don't have to do the Python developer bits to install those.
So what does the install story look like? You have to install libvlc. And then what do you do with the SHIV thing? Do you have to, like, extract it, or can you just copy it anywhere and run it?
No, you copy it somewhere and you execute it. It does actually, behind the scenes, extract it to a folder to run it, but you don't see any of that happen. As far as you're concerned, you are executing that file, and that works. I've mentioned before I was running this in a systemd service, so it runs on boot. So I've pointed the systemd service at the SHIV file, and that just works. Yes. So quite pleased with how all this went. So I'm now going to be continuing my Bookshelf Buddy adventures in Python.
Very good.
And I'll see how I get on from here.
Back in episode 44, I talked about setting up GoTo Social to learn more about that there activity pub, and as a hedge in case I ever needed to move my Fediverse account to something under my own control.
I'm sure that would never happen.
Well, that's what I thought. And just a few short months later, here I am moving my stuff to my own instance. So what I've been doing is migrating from Mastodon to GoTo Social. And by migrating, I mean actually moving all of my account data from a Mastodon account to my GoTo Social account. And a quick reminder, you know, for anyone that didn't hear, GoTo Social is a, as they say, fast, fun activity pub server. You can think of it as like Mastodon, but it's very lightweight and customizable, and it's sort of safety focused with moderation tools. And it's a way that you can have an account on the Fediverse, like a Mastodon account, but you can run it as a small single user instance on low powered devices like a Raspberry Pi, for example. And it's very simple to install and maintain, which was ideal for my experimentations and my now solo single person instance on that there Fediverse.
So it's one thing to run something like this for experimentation, but if you're actually going to be using it for a public account, I guess there's quite a lot of interaction with other users and their content on the Fediverse. How does a low-powered device, assuming that's what you're actually running on, cope with that kind of traffic and data volume?
So the device I'm running it on isn't particularly low-powered, so I can't sort of talk to how low-power can you go. But one thing I have done is I'm just using SQLite for the database as opposed to PostgreSQL. I wanted to keep it as simple as possible. And what I can tell you is, having done this migration, I'll talk about the mechanics of how you actually get from one place to the other in a bit. But having done that, my SQLite database is 80 megabytes, so quite manageable for sort of anything. And the default behavior of GoTo Social is as you interact with people and they're posting photographs or videos or whatever, it caches that media, that remote media locally, which is, you know, a polite thing to do. So you don't get sort of, you know, DDoSed by, you know, all of these instances hunting out, you know, the thing, you know, the supreme meme that you've just posted. But its default is to purge the remote media after 7 days. And then should it ever be encountered again, it can just re-request it and cache it again for another 7 days. So with that in mind, I'm following about 2,000 people. I'm federating with about 5,000 instances, and my media pool is about 2.3 gigabytes. So again, quite manageable, not too scary. And obviously my local media, the memes of my own that I post, those are persistent. So those stick around forever. So, you know, right, you can moderate your behavior accordingly. So, you know, all things considered, I think the GoTo Social process on my machine runs between about 250 meg to about 500 meg, depending on the amount of activity. You know, if I've just posted something amazingly popular and everyone's dashing in with their likes and boosts, then it can go up a bit.
So that's the amount of memory it's using?
That's the amount of RAM it's using, yeah.
Right.
So there's been a little bit of turbulence on the Fostodon instance. And one of the reasons for that is that they've been very popular and it's a lot of hard work. And so I thought I would move to my own instance to reduce the burden that they have to carry and also to increase my learning. So there's a couple of things. GoTo Social has had a couple of revisions since I first installed it. And in the current version, which is 0.19 at the moment, it introduced features to backdate posts or statuses. And the reason that that was added and the developer that added it is because that developer makes a tool called Slurp, which is a way to migrate data from a Mastodon exports into GoTo Social.
Right.
So with the current version of Slurp, what you can do is hit the download all of my data from your Mastodon account and you get a zip file of all of your posts, your likes, all of the media that you've posted. So it's quite a chunky, well, depending on how much you've posted, quite a chunky data export. And then with Slurp, you can authenticate with your go-to social instance, point it at your data export and say, put all of that in my account. And it wears down the JSON objects that are in that data export and all of the GIFs, MP4s and JPEGs and PNGs and all of that good stuff. And it inserts them as backdated posts over the GoTo Social APIs, but in such a way that it doesn't send them out as notify your followers.
Right.
So it backfills. So you, in addition to just being able to move your account from one place to the other, you can take your entire post history with you as well, which I found very attractive.
Yeah.
Neat.
And then do you just follow, from Mastodon's point of view, do you just follow what Mastodon sees as the account migration process of saying, this account now lives over there and it's your go-to social URL and people will be redirected?
Yeah, so it was a three-step migration. The first thing I did was import the accounts that I follow. So I exported the accounts that I follow and then imported those on my new go-to social instance. So I was following all of the people that I was previously following. I then migrated all of my posts over. And then the last step was to go to my old Fosterdon instance and say, I now live here, and point it at my go-to social account. And then magic that happens on the Fediverse, the people that were following me on Fosterdon now become followers on my go-to social instance. And at that point, the migration is done. I don't think anyone notices that there's a change other than maybe my name looks slightly different or I change my avatar or whatever. But I think it's just business as usual. At least that's been my experience since I've done this.
Has anything not worked as well as you'd hoped?
It's been pretty good. I mean, some of the pros of GoTo Social are there's no complex infrastructure. So anyone that's been thinking about getting their own hosting on the Fediverse, I highly recommend GoTo Social. It's way, way, way simpler than Mastodon. And GoTo Social supports most of the common Mastodon APIs. So it's broadly compatible. So if you've used any software that knows how to talk to Mastodon, it will know how to talk to GoTo Social.
So you're hosting your own GoTo Social, just like, you know, some people host their own Mastodon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There are service providers who provide like ready-made turnkey Mastodon instances. Are there people doing the same thing for GoTo Social? I mean, it's only 0.19, so maybe not, but is it possible to like rent an instance of someone so you don't have to even do any of the stuff you're talking about?
Yes, there is. There's an organization called FediHost, and they're currently offering Mastodon and PeerTube hosting. And in their beta portfolio, they've got Pixel Fed and GoTo Social. And you can pick like the size of instance that you want. And they've got one of these little dashboard systems. So you can configure all of the DNS and subdomaining and web finger aliasing and URL redirection, all of that good stuff. So they're quite an interesting outfit and it's a reasonable price. I wanted to learn how to do this, you know. Hard mode. GoTo Social's super simple. It's really very straightforward. But yeah, FediHost look like a sensible outfit.
Nice.
In terms of clients, there's loads of choice. They recommend Tusky and FediText. So Tusky for Android, FediText for iOS. And I found that there's a project called Enafor, which is a web front end for generally Mastodon-like things. And I use that as my web instance, and it's beautiful and simple to use. And I suppose one of the downsides of hosting it myself is that, you know, I'm in control of this now, so it's my responsibility. So I did have to update my GoTo Social backup solution that I wrote. There's a few other people that have rediscovered my backup script as a result of me tinkering around with this and said, oh, this is really quite handy. I'm quite pleased with that tool. It works really well. So yeah, I think the major drawback of self-hosting, and I don't know if this is true if you have like a small Mastodon instance as well, is some of the sort of following and finding people isn't as fluid when you're sort of a solo person on a small instance. It's fine if you're like on the mobile app and you're reading something from someone and you go, oh yeah, they look interesting, I'll give them a follow. You just, you know, click their profile, hit follow, and it works. But when you do the same through like the web interfaces, that's a bit clunky. And I get the impression that there's some protocol in the works somewhere which might make a debut at some point, which eases this sort of, you know, process. But at the moment, if you're not on a big instance, it's hard to find people.
Don't worry, it's just as clunky on Mastodon.
Okay. But other than that, I highly recommend GoToSocial. Give it a go. It's a great project, very well put together, nice community. I've enjoyed my time interacting with them.